From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Wood pellets. They're a simple idea, but their potential implications are far more complicated and controversial. Member countries in the European Union are buying these small compressed cylinders, which are made up of everything from sawdust to wood pulp, to use as a more planet-friendly fuel source than coal. Eventually, some say increasing restrictions on allowable carbon emissions will force the discontinuance of wood pellets as a fuel source because they'll no longer meet government requirements. But right now, European subsidies are fueling an important emerging market in the Southeast, and particularly North Carolina. But environmental advocacy groups such as the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Southern Environmental Law Center, and North Carolina-based Dogwood Alliance all say that the use of wood pellets for fuel not only decimates forests, it actually produces higher carbon emissions than fossil fuels. Today, we'll explore some of these claims, and we'll also find out what kind of economic impact the wood pellet industry is likely to have in North Carolina and the Cape Fear region. Enviva, a large manufacturer of wood pellets, recently built a storage facility at the Wilmington port and has plans for two manufacturing plants in the state. The company was seen as such an economic boon by state leaders, potentially investing more than $200 million in North Carolina, that they could qualify for up to $1.7 million in incentives from the state. With us today from Enviva is Morgan Pitts, Manager of Communications and External Affairs. Morgan Pitts, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
Also joining us in studio to help us understand why environmentalists are so opposed to the manufacture of wood pellets is Adam Makin. He is campaign director at the Dogwood Alliance, an environmental advocacy group dedicated to preserving the forests of the Southeast. Adam Makin, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rachel. Happy to be here.
And joining us by phone from the North Carolina Forest Service is utilization forester Clay Altizer. Clay Altizer, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate you letting me be on today.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have a question about the wood pellet industry and how it impacts North Carolina, either economically or environmentally? Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send your comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Morgan Pitts from Enviva, explain to us first what we're talking about here. These wood pellets, what are they made of and how are they used?
So wood pellets are a renewable energy resource that we do manufacture right here in North Carolina, as you've mentioned, and they're shipped to energy utilities worldwide. And these energy utilities use wood pellets in place of coal. And they do this to meet binding targets for carbon dioxide emissions and get to enjoy a lot of other benefits as well, reductions in pollutants like mercury, arsenic, lead, sulfur, which causes acid rain. So the primary driver is that improved energy profile. As far as the pellets themselves, they're made out of low-grade round wood, wood chips, sawdust, basically the lowest-end residuals from the forestry industry that are left over after higher-value harvests for things like saw timber, for telephone poles, things like that.
Adam Makin of the Dogwood Alliance, part of your group's concern relates to the loss of trees and impending climate change. Isn't climate change exactly what European countries are trying to address by using wood pellets?
That is correct. Under the European policy, their renewable energy policies, when they were enacted, they considered all forms of bioenergy or biomass to be carbon neutral. But really, the science is showing us and is pointing in a very clear direction that nothing could be further from the truth, that when we're burning trees and large diameter wood, including whole trees or very large pieces, residuals, as Morgan mentioned, that's actually increasing carbon emissions over the near term for decades in the future. And if we know anything about adequately addressing climate change and what it means for our communities, especially coastal communities like Wilmington, we know that we don't have that long to wait, that we must be reducing climate change now.
Clay Altizer, with the Forest Service, you authored a report in 2012 that concludes the forest products sector is the largest manufacturing sector in the state and that there are manufacturing facilities in every county in North Carolina. Is that still true in 2015? And how important is the forest products sector to the North Carolina economy now?
Well, Rachel, the forest products industry is approximately a $25 billion contributor to the state's economy and supports about 127,000 jobs across the state. There are not actually manufacturing facilities in every county. There are certainly wood fiber comes from probably every county and is used in some form or fashion at the wood-consuming mills. So those numbers might have changed a little.
Mm-hmm. And Morgan Pitts from Invivo, why are these European countries buying wood pellets from the United States? Why aren't they manufacturing wood pellets in their own countries?
Well, I think it's important to point out that wood pellets are manufactured all over the world, and it is not just the United States that's supplying them. We are an excellent region to supply them because of the long history of sustainable forest management and the robust forest products industry and infrastructure that already exist. But European countries are sourcing them from Canada, from Eastern Europe, and elsewhere as well.
Mm-hmm. We have a tweet. The American Forest Foundation tweeted, one of the biggest threats to family-owned forests is actually development pressures, not over-harvesting. They say forest threats can actually be addressed by markets for sustainably managed wood, providing woodland owners needed financial support. Adam Macon from the Dogwood Alliance, how does your group find that balance between what this means to private landowners economically and preserving forests?
Yeah, development is easily a threat to forests, but you know, smooth-talking industries like Enviva that want to paint the wood pellet industry as an economic boom are really putting forth a false solution, especially in this 21st century economy. As we've seen and it has been proven by reports from the Forest Service itself, the emergence of this industry will actually increase logging and increase conversion of our natural forests to pine plantations. So saying that the best way to protect forests is to log them is really a backwards argument and a red herring and distracting from what's the real issue at hand here, which is that our critical habitats and the services that these forests are providing us are under threat.
Okay, that leads right to I got a very detailed and it's a lengthy email from Dwight Batts, who is a Wilson, North Carolina private forest land owner. And Dwight Batts is also the winner of the 2014 American Forest Foundation National Tree Farmer of the Year. And he thanks us for airing this conversation. And he says, as an unpaid supervisor for North Carolina Soil and Water, a member of the North Carolina Tree Farm Program, and an active member of many other conservation and wildlife organizations, he says, I can appreciate passion and enthusiasm on both sides. Being a North Carolina Century farm owner, my wife and I are glad to see new markets open up for our product. It is the marketplace that makes it possible for us to manage our third-party certified tree farm to the highest possible sustainability standards, not only for the trees, but also for wildlife habitat, water protection, and recreational opportunity. It is also the marketplace that will make it possible the transfer of this farm to members of our family to manage into the future. We are in global competition, but also in a great position to compete successfully if we don't get into our own way. As landowners, we invest in the beginning of a 30 to 75 year forest cycle, get caught in the middle of discussions and rulemaking, and are at the tail end when it comes to financial gain. Come on, help us out, and let's all work together so we can become a global forestry powerhouse. And he says, finally, I would invite both participants to meet on our farm and see just what difficulties and rewards we enjoy daily as we attempt to provide what both of them want. Sincerely, Dwight Batts. And once again, he's a private forest land owner. Adam Macon of the Dogwood Alliance.
Yeah, I would like to make a couple very quick points. Number one is that, we are working desperately to protect the native and natural forests from this emerging industry. We know for a fact that Enviva's facilities in North Carolina are logging primarily hardwoods and are using primarily native hardwood forests for their feedstocks. So pine plantations could be a little different issue here. Also, in terms of a tree farm, when we think about the benefits that forests provide us, Dwight had it right in terms of that they're providing clean waters to millions of Southerners, that they're protecting us from climate change through carbon sequestration, and they're providing habitat. But it's been shown and proven that pine plantations are 90% or more less biodiverse than a natural forest and are often sprayed with chemicals. What we need to be doing is we need to be developing incentives for landowners to keep their forests standing, for landowners to generate revenue off things like carbon sequestration, for valuing the services that those forests provide. That's the future of this economy, not cutting down our trees and burning them.
Morgan Pitts of Enviva.
Well, I think when it comes to determining ways for landowners to develop revenue from ecosystem services, the forest industry in the Southeast has a strong track record already. You know, today there's 50% more forest than there was in 1953. That's largely because of these economic incentives that industries provide. And so to the point that you made earlier, U.S. Forest Service, I don't know if it was the same report or not, but one of the reports by the U.S. Forest Service recently found that actually the influence of the pellet industry will result in greater forest land in the future. And I don't see how that's not a good thing.
Morgan Pitts, is it true that Enviva uses mostly hardwoods for the production of these wood pellets?
At our Mid-Atlantic facilities, yes.
Okay. And Clay Altizer, actually, we're about to go to break in just a moment. But when we come back, I do want to ask you about what that means for sustainably managed forest lands. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about wood pellets today, the implications for both the economy and the environment. With us today to answer your questions are Dogwood Alliance Campaign Director Adam Macon, Enviva Communications Manager Morgan Pitts, and joining us by phone is Clay Altizer, a utilization forest with the State Forest Service. If you have a question, give us a call, 910-343-1138. We'll be back in 90 seconds and we'll talk with Tim. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio today, Adam Macon of the Dogwood Alliance, an environmental advocacy group opposed to the manufacture of wood pellets, and Morgan Pitts, Manager of Communications and External Affairs for Enviva, one of the largest producers of wood pellets. Joining us by phone, State Utilization Forester Clay Altizer. If you'd like to ask our guests a question, now's your chance. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using Coastline HQR. Tim, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Pim Jenkins. I live in Wilmington and I own Turnbull Lumber Company in Elizabethtown, North Carolina, in Bladen County. Mm-hmm. First, want to say that I'm sympathetic to the concerns of the Dogwood Alliance. We all want healthy forests for multiple uses, both for recreation, for management, for the good of the environment, and for a healthy climate. My concerns are specifically around rural economic development. Just in my, what would be considered a medium-sized hardwood sawmill, we employ 45 people and support 45 families, so we probably are supporting, in the larger sense, with everything that goes around, that 120 families. And the risk that I see for us, we're, International Paper has made the decision to not utilize hardwoods in their process. So you've got this entire economic infrastructure for the logging of hardwoods and for landowners in southeastern North Carolina that's at risk. So I'm, from a personal standpoint, I'm excited about Enviva coming to our area. And the main thing, there's a book called The Bull Hunters. It traces logging and the forest products industry in southeastern Virginia, eastern North Carolina, and northeastern South Carolina since the 1600s. Most of the hardwood timber we're sawing is on at least its second rotation, if not its fourth rotation. and logging has been going on in these parts for a long time. So if it stopped, and I'll get to my question, how are landowners going to pay their taxes? How are we going to support these jobs? And my question for Mr. Macon is, given the factors surrounding the jobs, the economy, private landowners who depend on the forest products industry to pay their taxes, what is the Dogwoods Alliance? What is their vision to replace these economic drivers if someone like Enviva doesn't come in to consume these hardwoods by replacing international paper?
That's a good question. Tim, let's let Adam Macon address that. Adam, how are these families in these rural areas that rely on this industry for income, for the very center? It's the infrastructure of their economy in some cases. What's the Dogwood Alliance's idea around that?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and I think brings up a very critical piece to how we move forward and the vision that we see at Dogwood for rural North Carolina. As the caller mentioned, we have a traditional wood products industry that has existed for many generations here in the southern United States, and at Dogwood we've in fact, worked very closely with that industry, successfully negotiating forward-thinking sustainability contracts with some of the top paper companies in the world, including International Paper, who we work very closely with. In terms of the markets, I just want to bring back a point that I brought up before. As we live in a world right now where we have this very real threat of climate change, in which famous biologists such as E.O. Wilson are noting that we're in the sixth mass great extinction of species, in where we've lost so many of our natural forests, we need to really move forward and incentivize landowners, like I mentioned before, to keep these forests standing. Standing forests provide benefits such as clean water, such as carbon sequestration, and if we can provide those same benefits to landowners through valuation of those services, that's an incredible opportunity that we have. And one quick point that I'll say is that there was a new peer-reviewed study that just came out that said there's more jobs created through restoration and building a restoration economy rather than logging or the coal industry or these extractive industries that extract resources and leave communities behind in these boom-bust energy economies.
So Adam Macon of the Dogwood Alliance, are you suggesting then that the government creates a program to pay private landowners to preserve their forest land and not sell to the wood pellet industry? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think that would be an incredible, enormous step forward in the right direction to truly valuing the health and well-being and economic longevity of our communities in addition to the valuable forest resources that we depend on.
Morgan Pitts with Enviva.
So the forest products industry in the Southeast is a dynamic industry with a long history. And it supplies a lot of things. Sometimes the discussion that I hear makes it sound like it's just the pellet industry. But nothing could be further from the truth. The fact is that landowners who sell timber, they sell to make telephone poles, saw timber, etc. A lot of the things that we use every day that your home is built out of, that your furniture is built out of. And so I guess my question back to Adam or in general with this, I think it sounds like a very interesting concept, but where are we going to get building materials if we cease harvesting because cement and steel are tremendously environmentally intensive?
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I would say that, we want to support those traditional wood products industry, such as the saw timber industry, such as the paper industry, who has made huge steps towards sustainability, something we have not seen yet from the pellet industry. In fact, the traditional wood products industries produce, for example, a saw timber mill may produce, or a large mill, pulp mill may produce 200 local jobs and have an added value of two to three additional jobs in that community. A pellet industry may come in and produce 30 to 50 jobs and produce less than one additional job for that community. And I think that this also, when we start to devalue our forests, I come from a small rural extractive coal mining town in Kentucky. And we've seen over and over with these industries that when a local rural community is mined for its resources, that it hurts the economic longevity of the area. It makes it less attractable for folks to come to that area. It makes it less attractable for other industries to be located. We have to shift this way, this old way of thinking.
Morgan Pitts with Enviva.
Adam, I'm going to have to completely disagree with you on the jobs point. I've read the study that you're referencing, and to be candid, you miscategorize wood pellets and put us into basically a small cottage industry, which we most certainly are not. When you look at the actual data, our jobs multiplier is between 2.5 and 3.
Okay, I want to bring Clay Altizer with the Forest Service into this. Clay, one of the points that has been raised so far is the idea of hardwoods being used in this industry. And it's been mentioned that International Paper, a paper producer, has agreed to stop using hardwoods. Should there be a concern among North Carolinians that we're losing our hardwood forests? Where does the state stand on that?
No, Rachel, there shouldn't be a concern at all. Matter of fact, when you look at our state has 18.6 million acres of forest land, and about 66% of that is in hardwood species. So I don't think that's anything we need to be concerned about. And logging hardwoods for industrial purposes is certainly not a new concept in our state. And matter of fact, when in Viva, we talked about the hardwood pulpwood demand. When the Franklin, Virginia paper mill closed, there was already the infrastructure in place, the loggers, the landowners growing the resource, all that was intact. And then the mill closed. And overnight, that market completely disappeared. And Viva really stepped up and kind of filled that void. So the whole hardwood logging and hardwood being used for products is not anything to really need to be concerned about.
Tim, our caller earlier who owns a lumber company was talking about the fifth or sixth generation of hardwoods. Clay Altizer with the Forest Service, how long does it take for a hardwood to regrow versus, say, a pine tree?
It's going to be a little slower growth, but it really depends on, not all hardwood species are the same. Some are much more fast-growing than others. So, I don't want to just throw a number out, but pine trees do go a little bit quicker. But I think there's this misconception that our state isn't, pretty much predominantly pine plantation, and that's not accurate. Pine plantations only comprise, I think, about 14% of our 18.6 million acres.
Is there a trend towards converting native North Carolina forests to pine plantations? Is that happening, as the Dogwood Alliance contends it is?
I certainly haven't seen that trend at all.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the wood pellet industry in North Carolina, what it means to North Carolina's economy and environment. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. Here to answer your questions are Morgan Pitts, Manager of Communications and External Affairs for wood pellet producer Enviva, and Adam Macon, Campaign Director for Dogwood Alliance, a North Carolina forest advocacy group. With us by phone today from the North Carolina Forest Service is Clay Altizer, a utilization forester. Again, that number for questions of our guests is 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And Dwight from Wilson County, you are the winner of the Forestry Award for 2014, isn't that right?
That's right, Rachel.
Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for allowing me to ask these questions, and I want to thank both Morgan and Adam for being willing to sit down and have this discussion for us. I've got a couple of questions, if I have the time. The first one is really for Adam, and it has to do with this idea of carbon sequestration. And I know, at least the science I'm aware of, it seems to indicate that younger, faster-growing forests are the ones that sequester carbon faster than the older trees who are allowed to stand, in particular pines or hardwoods, for longer periods of time. Their growth rate slows, and therefore their ability to store carbon. What you take from it, Adam?
Adam Macon.
So the idea that younger trees sequester carbon faster is Not true. Older trees, larger trees, sequester much larger amounts of carbon than younger trees do. And also what we need to understand about forests is that they are an enormous carbon sink. If you have a forest that's been standing for 60 years, say, that forest contains 60 years worth of carbon. And so, you know, burning wood for electricity is essentially like setting off a carbon bomb. Essentially what we do is that we burn the forests that are supposed to protect us from climate change. And then in order to reduce carbon, but what we see is that we have to wait minimally 35, 40, multiple decades to see any sort of return. And in the while, we're losing those habitats, we're losing those forests in exchange for that. And so the science is showing us that we must be reducing carbon now, and that's just not what you get when you use forests for fuel.
And Morgan, I know you have a response, but I think we're getting a little jargony here. And so I just want to be clear for folks who aren't super familiar with this kind of a conversation, what we're talking about when we're talking about sequestration and carbon and trees. What happens with, and I'll let Clay Altizer with the Forest Service answer this, how do trees take up carbon dioxide, and how do they affect climate change? Why is this such a key part of the conversation?
Well, Rachel, I'm really don't have a whole lot to add to the carbon neutrality or carbon sequestration argument. You know, we're aware of it. We know there are scientists on both sides of the argument, but you know, I will say one of the best ways to sequester carbon is to keep land as working forests, and you know, our agency is certainly committed to doing that, to working with private landowners who own about 61% of the forests are non-industrial private landowners. We work with them one-on-one with woodland management plans to make sure that we meet whatever their management objectives are, whether it be timber management or wildlife habitat or aesthetics or whatever their unique values may be. We work with them to make sure that they keep their land and forest cover, and also do what we can to help the logging and transportation sector and also the forest products industry that employ a lot of our people in the state.
Okay. And Clay Altizer, when you say carbon sequestration, what exactly do you mean by that? What effect does a tree have on carbon? Does that question? And I'm just saying sequestration is sort of a – we're talking about when a tree grows up, what does it do to the carbon that's in the atmosphere?
Well, I'll let Morgan and Adam debate the carbon sequestration and that issue. I'm not really prepared to argue that today or debate that issue.
Okay. And I'm not even talking about this at a debate level. But Morgan Pitts, you've wanted to address this for a while from Enviva, so go ahead.
So to just provide a little context here, I think it's really important that listeners keep in mind that 94% of forests in the Southeast are privately owned. The majority of these, especially in North Carolina, are very small landowners. And they depend on income from these lands to maintain them as forests. Should income go away, should we eliminate forest products industries, then there's going to be no motivation and they'll convert them to soybeans or corn or develop them. And, you know, a Walmart parking lot is about the worst outcome of all for what used to be a forest. And the fact is that with the forest products industry we have in the Southeast, with the demand for wood fiber, we've seen over the last several decades, carbon inventories have continued to increase. That's been a steady uptick. So that's a good thing, and that's something that we should be continuing to encourage. And it's because of that, you know, that trend and the recognition that markets are very important for carbon uptake that organizations such as the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has explicitly recognized biomass, of which wood pellets are one form, as a sustainable source of energy.
We have a tweet. Rachel Weber says, why does Enviva think it's a sustainable practice to clear-cut wetland forests? Morgan Pitts.
A couple of things to unpack in that tweet. The first, and I think most important, is that Enviva purchases wood. And as I said before, we purchase the lowest value portion of the harvest. So some of that is pulpwood, which may have gone to a paper mill if one were still in existence. And below that, it's the tops and limbs of trees. It's not the bulk of the harvest. It goes to other markets. It goes to make, in hardwood cases, it goes to make furniture, it goes to make railroad ties, pallets. any number of other things. So as far as what Enviva is doing versus, you know, others, that's it's important to draw that distinction. But second of all, I think what's important to note is that when it comes to clear cutting, it is a well-established sustainable forest management practice. The Forest Stewardship Council, which Dogwood Alliance endorses, allows clear cuts of up to 40 acres or 80 acres in some cases. The average clear cut in North Carolina, 37 acres. So the average clear cut in North Carolina meets the standards of this organization endorsed by my friend Adam here.
Adam Macon.
So I would like to point out a couple of things here. You know, one thing that we do at Dogwood is to investigate the logging practices of the pellet industry. And personally, I have followed logging trucks from the facility, followed those trucks to a logging site, and trudge through the woods to find that logging site and come across. And I can tell you from personal experience that when you come across that clear cut in a wetland or a swamp in this habitat, it's devastating to see. And when the industry says terms that are confusing, like low-value wood, again, let's unpackage that term. If you're looking at the value of a wood, how are we valuing that wood? Are we valuing it for just the economic price tag put on that tree? So, for example, if you had a 60-year-old cypress tree that was home to a North Carolina black bear because it was hollow inside and that black bear made it its home and it hibernated there, well, economically speaking, as we currently value this system, that would be a low-value tree. But as we all know, the values of that tree are they're unquantifiable in terms of their importance. And so we really can't get confused. And what we know is that these ecosystems and these habitats are being threatened and they're being harmed by this industry.
And there are a couple of elements to the idea of low and high value Morgan Pitts from Enviva. And I want to make sure we're about to go to break, but I want you to address that when we come back, because there's also saw timber versus what's used for wood pellets, which is a whole different conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's conversation about wood pellets, what they mean to the state and local economy and the environment. We're about to go to a brief break. We'll come back with one segment left for you to ask our guests a question or voice a concern. With us today, Enviva's Morgan Pitts, Dogwood Alliance's Adam Macon, and North Carolina forester Clay Altizer. The phone number to call is 910-343-1138. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, Morgan Pitts from wood pellet manufacturer and exporter Enviva, and Adam Macon of the environmental advocacy group, the Dogwood Alliance, dedicated to preserving southeastern forests. With us by phone is utilization forester Clay Altizer of the North Carolina Forest Service. If you'd like to ask a question of our guests, well, you won't be able to get through right now. The phone number for later on is 910-343-1138, or send an email if you can't get through to coastline@whqr.org, and think about tweeting us at @CoastlineHQR. Before we went to break, Adam Macon of the Dogwood Alliance had just talked about low versus high value trees and how do you place a dollar value on a particular tree. Morgan Pitts from Enviva, your response.
Well, I think, you know, when Adam and I talk about value and value of forests, it's easy to see that we are coming at it from perhaps two slightly different perspectives. However, I strongly believe that the two are in no way mutually exclusive. The value as far as attractive timberland, as I've mentioned earlier, is really in things like saw timber, you know, the high value wood that landowners can sell for a high price tag, which go to make, again, dimensional lumber or furniture, things like that.
And at this point, just to be clear, it's more lucrative for a landowner to sell trees for saw timber if they can do that.
Oh, absolutely. Landowners aren't growing trees to sell to the pellet industry. They're growing trees to make into telephone poles and saw timber. The pellet industry pays pennies on the dollar for what that brings in. So, just to come back to the two notions of value, the other one is ecological value and ecosystem services, and those are very important. And I think that They're very important to us at Enviva, too, in making sure that we promote sustainable management of forest land so that you can have harvests for wood fiber while also protecting water quality, habitat. And that's the reason that we as a company have pursued multiple certifications. We hold chain of custody certification from all of the leading forest sustainability organizations, Forest Stewardship Council, which I mentioned, Sustainable Forestry Initiative, and others. And we also have programs in place to ensure that even when not operating in a certified forest land, that we monitor the supply chain and that best management practices which protect water quality are followed. So we think that there's tremendous ecological and economic value to the Southeast working forest.
We have an email from Connie Majorette. She's from the Wilmington Chamber of Commerce. She says, with the anemic job growth we've experienced in recent years, we welcome Enviva and the jobs they will provide. We're impressed with their willingness to work with their Sunset Park neighbors to mitigate impacts. Thank you. Once again, this is we've seen so much support coming in for the boost that Enviva is bringing to both the state economy and the local economy. We also have an email from David Henderson, who is president of the North Carolina Tree Farm Program in Asheboro. And he says the forest economy in North Carolina can be described as a three-legged stool. The non-industrial private landowners own 70% of the forested acres in North Carolina and are represented by one leg. The North Carolina Tree Farmer Program encourages tree farm certification, sustainability, and stewardship on private forest land. Forest industry is represented by the second leg, that sawmills, paper mills, energy pellets, one of the state's largest employers, he says. And president of the North Carolina Tree Farm Program says the third leg of the economy represents the logging contractors, including truckers, equipment dealers, fuel and lubrication businesses. Each of these three legs of the forest economy stool must be financially stable or the stool falls. With a weak forest economy, there's less incentive for individuals to own and maintain sustainable, healthy forests for all North Carolina citizens to enjoy the benefits. Adam Makin of the Dogwood Alliance, once again, we're presented with this really important economic element to this industry.
Yeah, and speaking of economics and being able to support forest economies, let's look specifically at how the biomass industry is able to function. When we get down to it, the reason that the wood pellet industry exists is because the false claim that they're a solution to climate change. But what we're seeing is the science is shifting around that and the policy is shifting around that. This industry is solely reliant on subsidies from both Europe and right here in the States. One of Enviva's main buyers is the utility Drax in the UK. Drax is currently making $1.5 million a day in subsidies. It's 76% of their total annual gross profits.
Which is a really interesting element to this conversation. So if that's true, if this emerging market is being fueled by European subsidies that will eventually evaporate as target carbon emissions become more restrictive overseas, then is this a boom or bust kind of industry, Morgan Pitts of Enviva?
Absolutely not. The policy shift, and I'm going to try to avoid jargon here and apologize, but there's one subsidy scheme that is in place right now in the UK that does expire in 2027. It is being replaced by a different one. And that's just it is a shift in policy, but not with regard to the recognition of the benefits that biomass and wood pellets bring.
But the replacement subsidy, you're saying, will support the wood pellet industry?
It will support all energy industries in the UK. This is their method. This is how the UK makes national energy policy. So the notion that we're going to somehow evaporate in 2027 based on purely that proof point is false. And if I may make one more, the reason that subsidies like this exist is to jumpstart new industries. That's why wind and solar receive subsidies as well. The idea is to bring new industries up to achieving economies of scale so that they can actually compete. And we're very confident that wood pellets, first of all, already in some markets are cost competitive with fossil fuels today. And we're very confident that over time that will continue to be more and more so.
Okay, we have a full phone bank. Let's take Jack from Hampstead. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Hello, Jack.
Yes. Thank you very much. I own the type of hardwoods that Enviva is clear cutting in northeastern North Carolina within driving distance of their Husky pellet plant. And I would never dream of allowing it to be cut for such purposes, but I think I stand on good grounds in terms of knowledge of what they're cutting. And I've also planted mixed hardwoods on some marginal row crop land. But what I really want to speak about is my experience in the U.K. I'm fortunate to spend a couple of months there every year, and I spend a lot of time with professionals in botany and horticulture. And when I have the chance to tell them about what's happening on wood pellets, they are amazed. They have the concept that the wood pellets being burned in the U.K. as a so-called green energy is coming from rapidly generated types of fibers such as switchgrass, bamboo, or fast-growing willows. When I tell them about clear-cutting hardwoods, especially in wetlands of places like eastern North Carolina in the Roanoke River Valley, they are just amazed. And I think it's only a matter of time before the full light of day comes to shine on what the U.K. government thought was a proper, and they were well-meaning in what they did, but it's just seriously environmentally flawed. And I'm hopeful that even if we aren't smart enough in North Carolina to get our arms around what's going on, that the U.K. government will, and the subsidy will stop, and things will take care of themselves. Thank you.
Jack, thanks so much for your call. And we have Dwight, once again, Dwight Batch from Wilson. You had a follow-up question for our guests.
Yes, I did. I apologize for not getting it in earlier, but the question, one for Morgan and one for Adam, and I think these will require short answers. The first question I'll give to Morgan, and it's this. When we have sustainable forest, it does take a commitment, and especially if you're looking for diversity in the forest, which is required according to our certified forests, is Enviva willing to pay more for that product?
Morgan Pitts.
Yes, we are. We are willing to pay more for certified fiber. And in addition to that, speaking of certified land, Enviva has recently launched its own independently managed group with the American Tree Farm System. So we support further landowner certification and sustainable forest management very directly.
Okay. And that's a great point, Dwight. Thank you so much for your call. Let's talk a little bit about landowner certification. What does that mean? Adam Macon.
So there are several different independent certifications, and as has come up multiple times here, a large percentage, over 90% of the forested land in the South is privately owned. What's important to remember is that because of that private landowner dynamic, there are very, very few laws or regulations that actually require these landowners to do any basic forest management practices, such as notifying the authorities before you cut, or protection of logging in wetlands, conversion of our natural forest to pine plantations.
It's private property.
It's private property, exactly. So that's why we have the existence of third-party certifications. What we've seen is that the vast majority, and particularly the ones that are strongly supported by the pellet industry, such as the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, allow for the worst of the worst practices to still happen, such as widespread clear cutting, conversion of natural forest to pine plantations, use of toxic chemicals in these plantations. They still allow for these practices, and then they get this green label stamped on them that says sustainable.
Well, and just from a logical sort of self-interest, I'm a private landowner, let's say, and this is an industry that's been in my family for many generations. Doesn't it make sense for me to want to preserve the land so that we can harvest again and again and again and manage it in a sustainable way?
Certainly. And those landowners should be utilizing that land for the high-value timber. They should, you know, from our perspective, they should grow their trees for things like high-value saw timber and then selectively cut those trees. But the fact is that, as we've mentioned, most of these landowners are small families. They're growing trees because they have land. To say that each family, each small landowner has a particular forest management plan is not an accurate depiction of what's on the ground. What we have here is a lot of large plantation owners calling in and making the case for the vast majority of landowners who are in these small land holdings. What they'll have is they'll get a letter and saying, we want to cut your trees. We'll give you this amount for it. They don't know whether it's a paper company or a saw timber company or a a pellet industry. That's what happens. And the particular areas in which Enviva is logging, not a lot of the saw timber actually exists. And that has been shown in multiple reports.
Okay. And we have a couple of people. We have Marty from Leland who wants to address carbon sequestration. Terry Meadowcraft tweeted, please just define it. So we will go to Marty in a second. But Morgan Pitts from Enviva, please respond.
Well, I think first and foremost, a lot of landowners do pursue land management plans. This is something that Clay can speak to better than I can. But I want to make just a couple of quick points. The first is the kind of land management that you're advocating, selective cutting, is also known as high grading, and that's been shown to be tremendously detrimental to biodiversity over time. Leaving the least healthy trees standing is not a good way to regrow new healthy trees. And the least healthy trees are effectively what we're talking about. The other quick point I would like to make as far as SFI versus FSC, and to be clear, Enviva supports all of those, and we are happy to work with landowners with all. We do have the group under American Tree Farm, but that Forest Stewardship Council allows clear cutting as well. So that's not SFI versus FSC. It's recognized as a sustainable forest practice.
And Marty from Leland, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. I understand you have some expertise in this industry.
Hi, Rachel. Yes, I'm Marty McDonald. I'm a former chemical engineer in the pulp and paper industry. I just thought I'd answer that sequestration problem you asked of the panel earlier. Sequestration is, you may be familiar with a chemical called chlorophyll. That's the green in all green trees and plants. Chlorophyll is used in a process called photosynthesis. It pulls carbon dioxide from the air, nutrients from the ground, and produces cellulose, which is the fiber in the trees, and releases oxygen back into the atmosphere.
That's an excellent explanation. Adam Macon of Dogwood Alliance.
And thank you, Marty, for setting us straight on the carbon sequestration. We can get in our own little bubbles sometimes. But, I would like to say that this is an emerging science that around this term of carbon sequestration and has been shown in multiple reports from the EPA's own science advisory board, from a study by the University of Georgia, from multiple reports by our partners at Southern Environmental Law Center and NRDC. I mean, counting all forms of biomass as carbon neutral is essentially the same as modern day climate denial. It's just not true.
Okay. Morgan Pitts, you have a response to that, and then we're going to quickly take our last call from Rochelle. Go ahead, Morgan.
Adam, I think we need to avoid getting into the my study is better than your study back and forth, but there are quite a few studies as recently as just a month ago from Duke University and NC State showing tremendous carbon benefits. What I also think is even more important is, as I mentioned earlier, United Nations has endorsed this. Multiple governments around the world have endorsed this. The US EPA has actually endorsed it. The Scientific Advisory Board acknowledges that there are tremendous climate benefits. They are currently undergoing a detailed rulemaking process, but that is at the core of what they published.
And I'm not able to take this call from Rochelle from Surf City. We're running out of time, but she does say, I'm a certified wildlife biologist with 12 years in forestry. A lot of the hardwoods are only here because we haven't had fire on the landscape. This cutting disturbance is better than no disturbance at all. And Bob has the following comment. The federal government classifies the wood pellet industry as a green industry. North Carolina Forestry Service says we have an excess of 4 million tons of wood in North Carolina that's currently going to waste because they aren't being used. They just rot and fall. And Enviva's plan is to primarily use limbs and tips and other things that are currently being left in the forest when other timber is being cut. Adam Macon, 30 seconds, final thought.
I would just say that this is the direction that this industry is heading is going to increasingly pose threats to the communities, the forests, and the climate, and it's a bad investment for North Carolina communities.
Morgan Pitts.
And I will say that Enviva was founded 10 years ago with the intent to make the world a better place, and that is absolutely true. We go to work every day to support healthy forests, lower emissions, and vibrant communities throughout the Southeast, and we look forward to being in Wilmington.
That's this edition of Coastline. Thanks to our guests, Adam Macon, Morgan Pitts, and Clay Altizer. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who emailed in your comments. Coastline is produced by Isabel Shepherd. Our technical director is Ken Campbell. Our web wizard is Melissa Stone. If you missed part of the show, we'll post it on our website. You can also download the podcast from the iTunes store. WHQR.org is the website. There you'll also find podcasts of earlier shows. Thanks again for listening. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.